Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Redeemed Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from Parade Magazine. Question number one, who was the first country artist to have a top 20 hit on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart for six straight decades? Was that A, Willie Nelson, B, Dolly Parton, C, Garth Brooks, D, Loretta Lynn, or E, Johnny Cash? Top 20 hit for six straight decades. Who was that anyway? And question number two, which of the following classical composers was deaf? Was that A, Frédéric Chopin, B, Johannes Brahms, C, Andrea Bocelli, D, Ludwig van Beethoven, or E, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky? Deaf composer, who was that? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of July 16th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1953, that Elvis's very first recording, My Happiness, was recorded as a gift to his mother, 1953, today. And it was 26 years ago today, 1995, that the oldest known musical instrument in the world was found in Slovenia. The 45,000-year-old relic was a bear bone with four artificial holes along its length. 1995, today. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, On Music, Five Other Composers Who Went Deaf. This is written by David K. Israel on the 25th of September, 2007, in mentalfloss.com. Like Bach, William Boyce, 1711 to 1779, made his living as a church keyboardist, but was also a master composer, one of the best to come out of England during the 18th century. Boyce went deaf and had to quit his job as an organist, but went on editing works by well-known composers like William Byrd and Henry Purcell. A colleague of Mozart, Ignaz Holzbauer, 1711 to 1793, wrote about 70 symphonies and over a half a dozen operas. During the last years of his life, he was totally deaf. Then there's Felix Dresecki, 1835 to 1913, is most famous for his piano piece, Sonata Quasi Fantasia, which was admired by Franz Liszt. Dresecki wrote operas and symphonies, even though he suffered from a chronic hearing ailment that later left him almost completely deaf. And then there's Gabriel Fauré, 1845 to 1924, is best known for his gorgeous Requiem. like Boyce, Holzbauer, and Dresecki before him, Farré went deaf later in life and had serious trouble hearing high and low frequencies. Perhaps the best known of the lesser known composers to lose hearing late in life is the brilliant Czech composer, Bedřich Smetana, who was already going deaf when he wrote his famous piece, My Country, a symphonic tone poem featuring a movement called Meldau. As he lost his hearing, Smetana also suffered from chronic tinnitus, which eventually caused him to go insane. In 1884, he died in a mental hospital in Prague. Oh Joy, as the name implies, the Meldau paints a musical portrait of the famous river that twists through the Czech Republic. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Seven Famous Deaf Musicians with Hearing Loss. And this is published on the 19th of February, 2020, in PoweredByOrange.com. Music is a seemingly magical force that moves us all, no matter what background we come from, where we will end up, or what's going on in our lives presently, there will be a genre of music that speaks to us. However, the music that we all love does not simply materialize out of thin air. It takes grand amounts of talent and dedication to craft the sounds that can echo throughout history and still resonate with listeners. However, there are many other challenges associated with music composition. For a select few musicians with hearing impairment, there is an entirely different tier of challenges. These musicians may require hearing aids and other tools to help with their conditions, but they have not let the hearing loss impede on their musical success. Here are several of the more famous deaf musicians of all time. Ozzy Osbourne. It isn't hard to imagine that the godfather of heavy metal may have listened to some pretty loud and intense music throughout his career. As such, it was inevitable that his hearing would be affected by the years of performing. In the end, Osbourne managed to walk away with only mild hearing damage and tinnitus, which causes a very noticeable persistent sound in the ears. However, he was still able to appreciate the danger that could come from enjoying music a little too much. This led him to encourage listeners and musicians of all ages to protect their ears when attending or performing at live concerts. He also starred in an educational video titled Listen Smart that was used to spread awareness about hearing loss and how to protect your ears from damage. Then there's Stephen Stills. Hearing loss can be diagnosed at a very young age, as was the experience for young Stephen Stills. However, it can most definitely worsen as time goes on, especially for a musician. As Stills performed live as well as in recording sessions, his hearing suffered further damage. Luckily, a former musician known as Neil Young helped Stills out by suggesting special hearing aids that improved his life significantly. Then there's Evelyn Glennie. Dame Evelyn Glennie is a percussionist who began losing her hearing at the age of 8. Despite the best efforts to maintain her ability to hear, she was deaf by the age of 12. Naturally, this did not stop her from becoming a Grammy Award-winning artist and a well-known name in the world of music. By performing barefoot, Glennie is able to feel the vibrations created by the percussion. Using this, this famous deaf musician continues to grace the world with her impressive sounds. Then there's Mandy Harvey, another gifted musician that suffered from hearing issues at a young age. Mandy Harvey overcame a great deal in order to bring her lovely jazz sound to the masses. She pursued her passion, leading her down the path of becoming a music professor. Unfortunately, her hearing began to rapidly deteriorate. Even with medical treatment, she completely lost hearing in both of her ears. That helped her through the hard time was the realization that she could still play the piano perfectly well, as well as the fact that her pitch was so on point that the key to her singing was to remember how to sing the notes she intimately knew. Her experience allowed her to continue to thrive long after sound had left her. Then there's Sean Forbes. Sean Forbes is quite a bit different than many of the others, as he has pretty much always been deaf. This is due to a severe illness that he suffered from 1 year old. Music would always be a large part of his life, however, as both of his parents were musicians. Growing up surrounded by the rhythm of music, Forbes became interested in the vibrations that came from the sounds around him. Naturally, this led him to taking up the role of drummer, followed by guitar and bass. After that, however, he found his genre in the loud rhythmic bass of rap music. This led to his debut album, I'm Deaf, as well as the creation of a non-profit organization known as D-PAN, which finds and promotes deaf artists in many different fields. And then there's Janine Roebuck. Being told that she simply can't do some is one of the greatest sources of ambition a person can get. This happened to Janine Roebuck while she studied music at Manchester University. Music was her lifelong passion, but she unfortunately began to notice that sound was fading from the world around her. Upon receiving the results of a hearing test, she was advised to, quote-unquote, sing while you can, as she would never have a career in music. Roebuck continued her education before moving on to the Paris Conservatoire, as well as the National Opera Studio in London. She eventually gave in to hearing aids that allowed her to continue to perform, but was afraid of the reception she would receive afterwards. To her surprise, she was met with respect and admiration for her dedication and perseverance. And finally, there is Ayumi Hamasaki, known as the Japanese Empress of Pop. Ayumi Hamasaki stunned fans when she announced that she could no longer hear out of her left ear in 2008. The reality of the situation was that she had been suffering from gradual hearing loss since the year 2000. She then went on to assure fans that she would continue to sing as long as she could and has since produced more albums that have been met with high praise. Ayumi Hamasaki is one of the most famous deaf musicians in Japan.
Lights up on Washington Heights, up at the break of day. I wake up and I got this little punk I gotta chase away. Pop the grade at the crack of dawn, sing while I wipe down the awning. Hey y'all, good morning. I am Snotty and you probably never heard my name. Reports of my fame are greatly exaggerated, exacerbated by the fact that my syntax is highly complicated, cause I immigrated from the single greatest little place in the Caribbean, Dominican Republic. I love it.
Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights introduces our Broadway and pop music news. It's a review of In the Heights by Leah Greenblatt, published in Entertainment Weekly, July 2021. And it's given an A- by her. Movies don't generally ask for much beyond your eyeballs and your attention span. But to truly fall into a musical, sometimes you have to crack your heart open a little bit, just to let all that song and dance and bright-eyed sincerity in cynicism doesn't have a lot of room for jazz hands. And there may not be a bigger cardiac rush this year than John M. Chu's adaptation of In the Heights. The 2008 Broadway smash, perhaps best known until now, is the second biggest thing Lin-Manuel Miranda is famous for. Like his now canonized Hamilton, Heights is steeped in the joyful multiculturalism and dense a syncopated wordplay that has become his signature. Unlike it, the film version is both a faithful staging and a full-blown screen extravaganza of its own design. That's due at least in part to Chu, who sets his gorgeous young cast loose in New York City, where dazzling bits of magical realism, a gravity-defying waltz up the side of a building, a Bollywood meets Busby Berkeley sequence at a municipal pool, live alongside the starker realities of life in the predominantly Latinx Washington Heights. It's also home to Yusnava, who spent years running the bodega his late parents left behind, even as he dreams of returning to the Dominican Republic. Until then, he has his childhood friends, Benny and Nina, and the teasing promise of romance with a local beauty named Vanessa.
At least we got the store. It's all about the legacy they left with me is destiny. And one day I'll be on the beach with Sonny Wright and Chester.
I came
and
sang upon this day.
We came to work and to live and we got a lot in common.
They've got dreams too. Far beyond the car dispatch or nail salon jobs that just barely pay the bills. And Heights sets those hopes to music in ways that make their everyday subjects soar. Where else would a kaleidoscope show-stopping rest on a retired housekeeper as Pachiachina Ipe does with Hugo Meréndez, Abuela Claudia? She's one of several veterans, including Jimmy Smits and Daphne Rubin Vega, who color the vivid corners of the story. For all its rich tapestry and radiant ingenues, it's that casual centering of so many marginalized voices that makes the movie feel, in its own way, revolutionary. A technicolor marvel as heady as old Hollywood and as modern as this moment. Chick Corea, Spain, introduces our jazz music news in line with today's anniversary of the first Newport Jazz Festival held in 1954. It's an article titled Our 2021 Lineup. Although the 2020 festival was canceled due to pandemic restrictions, the Newport Jazz Festival is back this summer with a tribute to Chick Corea, whose music is playing in the background now. Join us this summer on July 30th, 31st, and August 1st at Fort Adams. The Newport Jazz Festival is a music festival held summers in Newport, Rhode Island. Most of the early festivals were broadcast on Voice of America Radio, and many performances were recorded and released as albums. In 1954, the first Newport Jazz Festival, billed as the first annual American Jazz Festival, was held. It incorporated academic panel discussions and featured live musical performances. The live performances were set outdoors on a lawn. These performances were given by a number of notable jazz musicians, including Billie Holiday, Miles Davis, and Duke Ellington, and were emceed by Stan Kenton. John Coltrane's Bessie's Blues, dedicated to jazz and blues singer Bessie Smith, introduces our local music news. It's entitled, Tickets Now on Sale for the John Coltrane International Jazz and Blues Festival, held in High Point, North Carolina, September 4 and 5, 2021. Go to ColtraneJazzFest.com, that's one word. And this was published in that site on March 2021 issue. High Point, North Carolina, the Friends of John Coltrane Incorporated, are proud to announce Grammy Award-winning and multi-platinum-selling artist Chris Botti will headline the opening day of the 10th John Coltrane International Jazz and Blues Festival on Saturday, September the 4th, 2021. As noted in a High Point, North Carolina.gov document, John Coltrane was born in Hamlet, North Carolina, on September 23, 1926. His family moved to High Point when he was only 3 months old. Coltrane spent the next 17 years of his life in High Point. While at William Penn High School, he began playing the saxophone. There is now an 8-foot bronze statue honoring one of High Point's most acclaimed citizens, John Coltrane, the legendary jazz saxophonist. So how did you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, who was the very first country artist to have a top 20 hit on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart for six straight decades? Was that A, Willie Nelson, B, Dolly Parton, C, Garth Brooks, D, Loretta Lynn, or E, Johnny Cash? Correct answer? Answer B, Dolly Parton. As noted in DollyParton.com, Dolly Parton becomes the first artist with top 20 hits on the Hot Country Songs chart in every decade since the 1960s. Dolly's last appearance on the Hot Country Songs Top 20 was her featured spot on Brad Paisley's 2006 number one hit, When I Get Where I'm Going. Dolly, Willie, and Brad, along with a host of country music's legendary and current artists, are featured on Forever Country. The song, an epic music video, is a mashup of Take Me Home, Country Roads by the late John Denver, On the Road Again by Willie Nelson, and Dolly's I Will Always Love You. The collaboration is a celebration of the 50th annual CMA Awards, at which Dolly received the Willie Nelson Lifetime Achievement Award. Dolly's first appearance on any Billboard chart was made back in 1967 when Dumb Blonde peaked at number 24. Dolly followed it up with Something Fishy, which climbed to number 17 in August of 67. And back in 74, Dolly's original version of Jolene topped Billboard's Hot Country Songs chart. And the answer to our second question, which of the following classical composers was deaf? Was that A, Frédéric Chopin, B, Johannes Brahms, C, Andrea Bocelli, D, Ludwig van Beethoven, or E, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky? Correct answer? Answer D, Ludwig van Beethoven. As noted in a PBS.org 12/17/19 article titled What Caused Beethoven's Deafness by Dr. Howard Markel, when Ludwig van Beethoven's magisterial Ninth Symphony premiered in 1824, the composer had to be turned around to see the audience cheering. He could not hear the audience's rapturous applause. Beethoven first noticed difficulties with his hearing decades earlier, sometime in 1798 when he was about 28. By the time he was 44 or 45, he was totally deaf and unable to converse unless he passed written notes back and forth. He died in 1827 at the age of 56, but since his death he remains just as relevant and important to Western culture, if not more so. What caused Beethoven's deafness? It is a query that has carried many diagnoses over the last 200 years, from tertiary syphilis, heavy metal poisoning, lupus, to typhus fever. Like many men of the late 18th and early 19th century, he suffered from a plethora of other illnesses and ailments. In Beethoven's case, the list included chronic abdominal pain and diarrhea, inflammatory bowel disorder, depression, alcohol abuse, respiratory problems, joint pain, eye inflammation, and cirrhosis of the liver. This last problem, given his prodigious drinking, may have been the final domino that toppled him into the grave. An autopsy revealed severe cirrhosis and dilatation of the auditory and other related nerves in the ear. A young musician named Ferdinand Hiller snipped off a lock of hair from the great composer's head as a keepsake, a common custom at the time. The lock was auctioned in 1994. It was purchased by an Arizona urologist for about $7,000, who pursued the question of how Beethoven became deaf through a number of imaging DNA, chemical, forensic, and toxicology tests. There was no trace of morphine, mercury, or arsenic, but there was an abnormally elevated lead level, potentially indicating chronic lead poisoning, which could have caused Beethoven's deafness. Further studies suggest he probably drank from a goblet containing lead. It should also be noted that wine of that era often contained lead as a sweetener. In his later years, he composed not only the Ninth Symphony, but completed both a solemn mass for orchestra and vocalist and the opera, Fidelio. Although the maestro suffered from so many physical maladies, he was still able to create a huge body of work that represents humanity at its best and most joyful. Fortunately, we have the transcendent, intellectually rich, and sonorous pieces of music he did give to the world, a gift that continues to enrich us. So let's close out today's program with one of these Beethoven gifts called Moonlight Sonata, written 3 years after he first experienced his hearing loss. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.